Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, two unlikely Christmas tales from radio's yesteryear. Later on, it's Dragnet from 1953, but right now, suspense with the story Back for Christmas, starring Herbert Marshall and Irene Tedrow from December 23, 1956 on CBS.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, William N. Robeson.
We pause now for a little murder, for a slight case of uxoricide. We turn our attention to blood as Herbert Marshall stars in Back for Christmas, a tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
Happy, Mrs. Carpenter?
Deliriously, Professor Carpenter.
Well, then how about another glass of champagne? Nothing goes better with a happy bride than a glass of bubbly.
Nothing? How about a happy husband?
That you have. To us.
To us. Forever.
Darling.
Oh, Herbert. I'm afraid it's all a dream, and I wake up any minute and find myself back in that drab little bookshop in Leicester Street, searching for obscure volumes for absent-minded professors.
Oh, so that's what you thought of me.
Oh, not you, Herbert. You were different. I felt it the first time you came into the place.
Premonition, second sight. You knew at that minute, I suppose, that I would whisk you off to America and make you my wife.
Well, not exactly. But I'm awfully glad you did.
You think you like America?
I love it.
I thought perhaps after this lecture tour is over, I might try to find a connection at some college or other and just stay on. What would you say to that?
I say, wherever you are is where I want to be.
Now, who in the world... Who is it?
Bellboy, sir.
Just a minute. Yes, what is it?
A letter, sir, for Mrs. Carpenter.
For Mrs.? Here, let me have it. Here.
Thank you, sir.
A letter for Mrs. Carpenter? Herbert, you were a widower, weren't you? I mean, Hermione isn't still alive.
What? Good heavens, no.
But that letter. No one back in England knows that I'm married.
Let's forget it, shall we? And have another glass of wine.
I've often wondered what she was like.
Who?
Hermione. You never told me anything about her.
I'd just as soon forget her, but she's not an easy woman to forget. Dominating. Always managing things, the house, my wardrobe, my friends. You might say she managed herself to death. Yes, Hermione.
What on earth are you doing down here in the cellar?
Putting the finishing touches on this wine bin.
Have you taken leave of your senses? Yes, I dare say you have. Look at you, the epitome of the absent-minded professor.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Well, I would. Whatever would become of you if I weren't here to look after you?
I wonder.
And well, you might. Have you any idea what today is?
Why, Tuesday, I believe.
Indeed. And what is going to happen today?
Well, according to your plans, we are flying to America on the 9 o'clock plane.
Precisely. And the good knows are coming in for tea in half an hour. And here you are digging a hole in the cellar.
It is not a hole. It's a wine bin.
It's more like a grave to me.
Yes, Hermione.
Go upstairs with you now and get into some clean things.
Yes, Hermione.
I've already dismissed the cook. You'll have to get the tea things ready while I'm taking my bath.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, dear, such a bother to go to. Closing up the house and all, and then than having to open it again when we get back for Christmas.
Back for Christmas? Back for Christmas? Must you keep saying that?
Well, why not? We are coming back for Christmas, aren't we?
Well, supposing I were offered a position in an American university.
Oh, not.
Well, they did ask me to come to lecture. That means something.
Well, not very much. Americans will pay to hear any foreigner deliver a lecture once. But there's no use building dream castles, Herbert. Nobody's going to offer you a fortune in America. Of course, the extra money you will get will be very handy when we arrive back for
Christmas.
Back
for Christmas.
Precisely. And it's no good you're making a joke of it. Oh, Herbert, heaven knows where you'd be today if...
Yes, Hermione.
So I'm going up to have my bath now. Call me when they arrive.
Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione, yes, Hermione. 20 years of it. 20 years of Hermione being right. 20 years of personal management. Down to the smallest detail of which necktie to wear and how many minutes one's eggs should be cooked. 20 years of slow strangulation. Which will only have ended in dull death. If it had not been for Marion. At least Marion was one detail that Hermione could not manage. Could not even imagine. The mousy proprietor of a bookstore, proper, ever so intellectual with her heavy, horn-rimmed spectacles. And the absent-minded professor. But such things do happen sometimes, as they did that afternoon last summer.
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. Is Miss Markham about? Well, I...
Oh, bless
me. Is it you, Miss Markham?
Yes, Professor Carpenter.
Would I say I didn't recognize you without your glasses? Why, I thought you couldn't see a thing without them.
I can't.
But you're not wearing them.
Oh, yes, I am. Contact lenses.
Well, I must say.
Must say what, Professor?
Oh, I never realized what lovely eyes you have.
Thank you, Professor.
And that frock, it is so becoming.
Well, once I decided to get rid of the horn-rimmed glasses, it wasn't too difficult to get out of tweed.
It's a delightful transformation. From cocoon to butterfly.
Yes. Butterflies are not nearly as lonely as cocoons.
You're lonely?
I'm completely alone since my father died.
Did you never think of marrying?
My father was a very remarkable man. I never found anyone who could measure up to him, so...
What a pity.
How long have you been alone, Professor?
Alone?
Well, I knew you were a widower, of course, the first time I saw you.
A widower?
Oh, I can always tell. It was the same with my father. There's a certain sadness in a man's eyes. A sweet sadness, I think, when he's been married and then...
A widower? I never thought of it quite that way.
Oh, I have your book.
Books?
Yes, the ones you ordered last week. That's what you came by for, wasn't it?
Yes, I suppose it is. I've quite forgotten.
The Phytotomy of Phalloid Gametophyte and Coniferous Shrubs of North America. Those are the ones you ordered, aren't they?
Yes. Thank you. You're very kind, Miss Markham.
Why kind, Professor Carpenter?
Well, not many young ladies in bookshops who go out of their way to look up rare books for an old professor of botany.
Why, you're not old, Professor Carpenter. Really, you look... Besides, I adore botany. It's my particular hobby.
No, really? You never told me that before, Miss Markham.
I was afraid to. You always intimidated me. You seemed so preoccupied.
Yes, I suppose I did. Well, you might be interested in some specimens of alpine polyanthes that were just sent to me by a friend in Switzerland.
Switzerland? Oh, I used to go there always for my holidays before the war.
You like Switzerland?
Oh, every part of it. The lakes, the mountains, the beautiful spring flowers, especially the flowers.
It seems that we have quite a lot in common, Miss Markham. I'm sorry we haven't talked before.
I am too. But perhaps we can make up for it in the future.
Indeed we shall. Had it begun, and one thing led to another, as they will with two lonely people. The invitation to lecture in America made a happy ending possible. While Hermione proceeded with her plans for the trip,
I made my own plans. Quite different plans. Now they were all but complete. Everything was proceeding according to schedule. My schedule. Even Hermione, drawing her bath upstairs, gave me the opportunity to phone Marion.
Hello?
Hello, dear.
Darling.
Are you all packed?
Almost.
Not much time left.
I know.
Excited?
Breathless.
Heathrow Aerodrome, 8:30.
I'll be there.
I love you, Marion.
And I, you, Herbert. Herbert?
I'm sorry, I've got to ring off now, darling. I'll see you at the aerodrome.
Tonight and forever, darling. Goodbye for a little.
Goodbye.
Phone just now?
Yes, Hermione.
Whoever was it?
Freddie Sinclair.
Didn't I hear you say something about seeing somebody at the aerodrome?
Old Freddie said he might possibly get out to see us off tonight.
Well, that seems very peculiar. But then all of your friends are peculiar.
Yes, Hermione.
I thought I told you to change your clothes before the guests arrive.
Yes, Hermione.
Never mind. Somebody just drove up. Don't let them in.
Yes, Hermione.
Herbert.
Yes, Hermione.
Look out the window. There's Professor and Mrs. Goodnow. But who's that with them?
Why, it's...
Precisely. Freddy Sinclair. Peculiar you should have been talking to him on the phone just now, when here he is coming up the walk.
Yes, isn't it? But then, as you say, Hermione... All of my friends are peculiar.
Not half so peculiar as you. Digging in the cellar an hour before we leave for America. Just look at yourself.
Yes, Hermione.
So go and let them in.
Yes, Hermione.
Open the door and stop saying yes, Hermione.
I think, my dear, I've said it for the last time. Back for Christmas. Hermione was so positive we would be back for Christmas. That afternoon, pouring tea for a few friends who had come in to say last-minute farewells, she kept reiterating it.
Now, mind you, Hermione, don't let those Americans lure your husband with one of their fat university jobs. We absolutely must have you with us for Christmas.
Oh, we will be back, I promise you.
Oh, it's not absolutely certain, of course.
Herbert, what do you mean it's not certain? Of course it's certain.
After all, Herbert, oh boy, you've contracted to lecture for only 2 months.
Quite right, Freddie, but then, of course, anything may happen.
Oh, Herbert adores being unpredictable. Now, what other man would decide today, the very day, mind you, before leaving for America, to dig a great hole in the floor in the cellar?
In the cellar?
Just for a wine bin. He's been talking about putting a wine bin in the cellar for the last 2 months, but he never got around to working on it until the last few days.
A wine bin? Whatever for?
It's the only way to store wines, you know, in the cellar. Even temperature, all that sort of thing.
Indeed. In that damp, they'll all turn. A proper wine bin should be made of concrete.
Mine will serve its purpose, I believe.
Oh, there you are, my dear. Men. They're impractical little boys at heart, all of them.
I don't know, Hermione.
Indeed they are. But not all of them are fortunate enough to have as practical a wife as you, Hermione.
Oh, not really.
Oh, yes, my dear. I know I could never have done what you've done. I'd just go to pieces. Imagine, Freddie, all the things one has to do before such a journey, and Hermione's done them all by herself.
Oh, yes, Hermione is quite remarkable.
Someone had to do them, and Herbert's no help.
He's a lucky man to have you, my dear. You realize that, don't you, Herbert?
Oh, indeed I do. You have no idea how well I realize it.
Well, we very must be going.
So soon?
Oh, yes. I'm sure even you have at least a few last-minute things you must attend to. But don't forget, you'll be back
for Christmas, if you may count on it.
Bon voyage, then, my dear Hermione.
Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Hermione.
Oh, not yet, Freddy. We'll make our farewells at the aerodrome.
At the aerodrome?
Why, yes. Herbert said you phoned to say you'd see us off at Heathrow.
I phoned?
Yes. Just a few minutes before you arrived.
But I couldn't have. I've been out for a drive all the afternoon.
Oh. Come, Freddy. You may as well own up.
I say, look here, old chap. I don't know what you're trying to...
You see? You see, Herbert?
can't even lie well. He's red as a beetroot.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Herbert, stringing poor Hermione along like that?
Well, I suppose the game is up. It wasn't Freddy I was talking to, Hermione.
Well, I don't see how it could have been.
No, I was, it was about a little surprise I was planning for you.
How sweet.
And I have a surprise for you, too, Herbert, when I bring you back for Christmas.
Oh, merciful heavens, I thought they'd never leave.
Oh, we still have plenty of time.
Well, not if we're to leave the house in proper condition for our return. Now, Herbert, ask you get that dust cloth over the Danforth. You can help me with the tea things in the scullery. No. Oh, no, no, not that way. Herbert, you're leaving wrinkles.
Well, who's to see it, my dear?
Well, I can see it, and I don't like it that way.
Yes, sir. Very well. How's this?
Well, a little better. Now let's get at the tea things. There's a dear. Oh, Herbert.
Yes?
What was all this nonsense about a surprise for me?
Oh, well, if I told you, then it wouldn't be a surprise, would it?
Oh, but we're too old to play children's games.
Hmm?
What is it?
Well, if you'll come down to the cellar, I'll give it to you.
In the cellar? Why in the cellar?
Because that's where it is.
Oh, really, Herbert, you don't make any sense. Now, help me with the tea things.
But you will come down to the cellar.
Well, later, Herbert, if this time...
Time. There had to be time. But Hermione was meticulous. And each cup to be washed and dried just so, and put away in the cupboard in its accustomed place just so. And the silver had to be carefully wiped and put away in its plush-lined box just so. And then, once more, all the dust covers had to be straightened and the windows chipped to be sure they were locked. And the time was running short.
That's everything.
Everything but your surprise. Will you come down to the cellar now?
Well, can't you bring it up here?
Oh, no, no, that would be quite impossible.
Oh, but it's so dusty down there, and I'm all dressed for the trip.
I know, but it'll only take a minute, and you'll find it quite worthwhile, I'm sure.
Oh, very well.
She went ahead down the cellar stairs. As we reached the bottom, I silently lifted a small crowbar from a nail in the wall. She stood in the middle of the cellar, peering around in the ill-lit gloom.
Well, I don't see anything but that silly hole you've dug.
That's it? It's in there.
Where?
Look closer. Step closer to it. Right to the edge.
Really, Herbert?
Now do you see it? A little large for a wine bin. But just right for a grain. Back for Christmas? No, Hermione. No, Hermione. You've planned it so well, Hermione. You're so predictable, so practical. Even to typing your letters and signing them with a neat cryptic H that I have learned to copy. I'll be your amanuensis. I'll write your friends for you, Hermione. Through me, you will tell them we won't be back for Christmas. And then you will tell them how much you like America and that you persuaded me to accept a teaching position. You will tell them that you may decide to settle there permanently. And then the letters will come less and less frequently until at last they will hear from me. And I will break the news to them that you have died in America. Then I will have my solicitors put this empty house with its sad associations up for sale. And that will be the end of the matter, Hermione. Back for Christmas? No, Hermione. No, no, no. No. No, no. Not now. Go away, whoever you are, go away. Did I leave the front door unlocked? No, no. Keep calm. Keep quiet. They won't look down here in the cellar. Keep calm. They'll go away.
Oh, where can they be?
Well, perhaps they popped round to the dell.
We must see them.
Or perhaps to the shop. There's something at the last minute, huh?
Oh, not a man.
Tonight he said they wouldn't leave till 7.
All right. Sonny, I do want a last drink with old Herbert. You know he'd be hurt.
All right. Let's hurry. We can be back by 6:30.
6:30. There's still time. After that, it was easy. Put the finishing touches to the wine bin. Dress fast. Get out of the house before 6:30. Take the tube to Waterloo Air Terminal and the airline's bus to Heathrow. All according to plan. Hermione's plan. But from here on, my plan.
Announcing the arrival of BOAC Flight 14 from Rome, Calcutta, and Melbourne. Passengers will please report to customs.
Darling.
Oh, Herbert.
Right on time, my dear. Shall we check in?
Whatever you say.
Scared.
I never felt safer in my life.
The no smoking sign just went out. Careful of cigarette, darling.
Yes, thanks.
Ever been on a plane before?
No, you?
My first time, too.
Oh, how nice. To enjoy your first experience together. I was worried.
About what?
Well, you having been married once, nothing would be new to you.
My darling, it will be new. All of it.
Is everything all right?
Yes, thank you.
Would you care for a pillow, Mrs. Carpenter?
Well, were you speaking to me?
Yes, Mrs. Carpenter. Would you care for a pillow?
No, thanks. I don't believe so.
Well, if you want anything, just ring the bell over your seat.
Thank you. Herbert?
Yes, dear?
He called me Mrs. Carpenter.
That's right.
But I'm not yet.
Well, you will be tomorrow this time.
But how does she know?
Well, that's the way our tickets read, Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter.
Why?
I wanted you to get used to being Mrs. Carpenter straight off.
Oh, Herbert, you're a dear. You think of everything.
Can I help you, sir?
Oh, yes, please. Professor and Mrs. Carpenter, we have reservations, I believe.
Oh, yes. We've been expecting you, sir. Take Professor and Mrs. Carpenter's luggage up to their suite. You know, frankly, Mrs. Carpenter, you're quite a surprise. Your letter reserving the rooms was so thorough, I was expecting an older, more forbidding sort of person.
My letter reserving the rooms?
Oh, I wrote the letter, my dear, and I signed it, Mrs. Herbert Carpenter, just as a joke.
Oh, what a cunning old fox you are, Herbert.
Now that I think of it, I am, Robin. Well, Mrs. Carpenter, we might as well kill the bottle, as they say here in America.
Darling, you'll make me tipsy.
That's what a bride should be, just a little tipsy.
Herbert, this letter the bellboy just brought seems to be a bill of some sort from a building contractor in Kensington.
Oh, some mistake, no doubt.
And addressed to me?
Well, give it here and we'll get to the bottom of the matter. Madam, this is to acknowledge your order, together with the keys to your house in Launceston Place. Our men had no difficulty in finding the place where your husband had begun the excavation in the cellar. But apparently he changed his mind at the last moment and filled it in again.
What is it, Herbert?
Our men will begin digging tomorrow, and you may rest assured it will be a professional concrete line job and will be completed in ample time for your surprise Christmas present to your husband. We are happy to be conspirators with you in this thoughtful gesture and hope that Professor Carpenter will be pleased with our construction of his wine bin. Very truly yours, Paul Holt and Sons Contractors.
What does it mean, Herbert?
It means that Hermione was right. I will be back for Christmas.
Suspense. In which Herbert Marshall starred in John Collier's story, Back for Christmas.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from the 23rd of December 1956 on CBS. One of their few holiday stories, as it were, the first airing of that tale was heard on December 23rd, 1943. You're listening to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now crime around the holidays on Dragnet with the story Big Little Jesus, starring Ben Alexander and leading man Jack Webb, from NBC from December 22nd, 1953.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, December 24th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary division. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Bernard. My name's Friday. I'd gone across the street to buy stamps for some Christmas cards I was sending out. It was 9:15 a.m. when I got back to room 45. Burglary. I sat down at a table in the squad room and I started to address the cards when Frank walked in carrying a stack of Christmas boxes.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Christmas cards, huh? A little late, aren't you?
Well, I was going to send them out Monday, but we had that stakeout.
You ought to get married, Joe.
Yeah?
The only system. Faye does all that stuff for me. Laundry, mails cards. Only system.
Might help.
You got a big stack there.
Ought to cut down the list. Look at this here. Upholstery shop.
Yeah?
They send me a card every year. I never get anything upholstered.
Faye and I ought to go over our list. Cut off a few names. I brought in your present. Want to open it now?
No, I'll wait.
I always open a couple a day before.
Why?
Well, I'll put you in the spirit ahead of time. I opened Phil's this morning.
Who's he?
Faye's brother in Denver. Gave me a magazine, one of those funny ones.
What do you mean, a comic book?
No, one of those funny ones, you know.
No, I don't, Frank.
Well, some of the pages have holes in them. You look through and there's a picture on the next page.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those on the newsstand.
They have cloth pasted in.
Cloth?
In the ads. If you want to buy a suit, they have a sample right there.
You mean you can feel it?
Reach right out and feel it. There was one for $200.
A suit?
Sure. Cloth comes from Scotland.
What's it made out of, solid gold?
No, they got a special kind of goat over there. It's real smooth.
Not a goat, Frank. A sheep.
Well, it's a special kind of sheep, then, because a suit costs $200.
You gonna get one?
I told Faye. She said, wear the sample. Anything doing?
Fanning and Pryor were in on that market holdup.
They come up with anything?
Pound of air, nothing else.
I hope it stays quiet. I got more shopping to do.
I finished.
What'd you get, Ann?
Stationery set, some paper and envelopes, leather binding.
Joe, you'll never learn.
Well, what's the matter?
No woman wants a stationery set. Get her something personal.
Well, it's got her initials on it.
No, no. You want something more sentimental, romantic.
What'd you get, Faye?
Different in her case.
What'd you get, Faye?
Sewing machine.
That's romantic.
Well, it isn't a way.
Why didn't you buy her a catcher's mitt?
Burglary Friday.
Yes, that's right. You have the right department.
All right, Father, we'll be right down. No, you can tell us about it there. Goodbye.
The old mission church, they've had a theft.
Collection money?
Statue of the child Jesus. Frank and I checked out of the office and rode over to the church at the corner of Sunset Boulevard and Main. The old Mission Plaza Church, founded 1781, the year Los Angeles became a pueblo. The outside was typical early Spanish design, complete with mission arches. It was made of adobe and painted white. They called it the Queen of the Angels. The Padres from down in Mexico built it. The devout Mexicans in town still attended services there. 10:05 a.m., Frank and I crossed through the courtyard. It used to be the old stable, but the Spanish priest changed all that when it became a mission. Stonemasons paved the stable floor and made it a courtyard. They planted grapevines, trees, and flowers. A young priest crossed the courtyard to meet us. He'd been sitting on a stone bench reading his morning prayers, as priests had done here for 172 years. We asked for Father Xavier Rojas, who communicated with us. We were told he was inside. We entered a side door. The church seemed to glow with the hundreds of votive candles flickering on both sides of the altar and at the shrine throughout the church. It was empty except for a few people praying. Surrounding the main altar were several old oil paintings and gold frames. The air was heavy with the scent of Advent flowers. We found Father Rojas up near the sanctuary looking at the nativity scene. He told us about the crib. It was a $70 duplication of the scene at Bethlehem. The parishioners had taken up a collection for it 31 years ago. It was put up every year on December 22nd and taken down after the holy season. It was beautiful, except that one of the shepherds had lost an arm, the sheep was old and cracked, and the infant Jesus was missing. Father Rojas led us back into the sacristy.
I'm sorry to bother you, man.
It's all right, Father.
Especially now, the holiday season.
We cash our checks, Father. You want to tell us what happened?
Or what you think happened? I discovered the statue was missing right after the 6 o'clock mass.
You say the 6?
Yes. I started over to the rectory and stopped by the crib.
Was the statue there before mass?
I don't know, but it was there last night.
How late is the church open?
All night.
You leave it wide open so any thief can walk in?
Particularly thieves, Sergeant.
You say it was there last night, Father. How late?
10 or 11 o'clock. We had confessions.
No one saw it after that?
One of the altar boys. He says it may have been there. He thinks it was.
Did he see it?
He's not sure.
What's his name?
Pardon me. Here's the schedule. You'll find the names for every mass there.
Was there a big crowd at the 6 o'clock mass, Father?
Not too many. 7's the big one. People on their way to work.
Did anyone stay after mass, did you notice?
Not especially. I came back here, took off the vestments. I suppose it was 10 or 15 minutes before I went back in the church.
It was empty then?
No, people were coming in for the 7 o'clock.
Are these the altar boys, James Corneen and Joseph Heffernan?
That's right. Joe's the one who mentioned it might have been there.
Did you check with the other priests, Father?
Before I called you. None of them knows anything about it.
Just for a check on the pawn shops, how much is the statue worth?
In money?
Well, that's the point in pawn shops, Father.
Only a few dollars. We could get a new one, but it wouldn't be the same. We've had children in the parish. They've grown up and married. It's the only Jesus they know.
We understand.
And we've had children who died. It was the only Jesus they knew. So many of the people who come here are simple people. They wouldn't understand, Sergeant. It would be like changing the evening star.
We'll do our best, Father.
That's why it would mean so much to have it back for the first mass on Christmas.
Not very long, Father.
Less than 24 hours.
If anything turns up here, you know where to get in touch with us.
Yes. It's sad, isn't it?
How's that?
In so short a time, men learn to steal.
Yes, but consider us, Father.
Us?
If some of them didn't, you and I'd be out of work. 10:50 a.m., we notified pawn shop detail. Frank and I checked out the two altar boys. The first one, James Corneen, said he knew nothing about the missing statue. The second one, Joseph Heffernan, was not at home. His father said he had a part-time job, but he'd have him get in touch with us right after lunch. By 11:30 a.m., we'd run out of book procedure. We had a man to find. Our only clue? He'd been to church. 11:33 a.m. We checked the phone books for the names of religious stores in the area. Two of them were closed. We tried the third. When we got there, the only person in the store was an elderly man sitting by a table. In front of him was a large, beautifully carved chess set. We're police officers. My name's Friday. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
Great to see you. Caught me in the middle of a big chess match.
Where's your partner?
Up in San Jose. We've been playing for years.
Same match?
No, just 2 or 3 months on this one. What I meant was we've been playing different matches for years.
I see.
You know, we do it through the mail. I send him a move, he sends me one.
Must keep you on your toes.
Except during the holidays, the mail gets all fiddled up. That's no good.
Guess not.
Slows things down. That's no good. I like to catch him off guard.
You Mr. Flavin?
How do you know? We never met.
Your name's on the window out front.
Mr. Flavin, we checked the other two religious stores in this neighborhood. They're closed.
This is the best one anyway. 50% European items.
We're checking the stores around the Mission Church.
For what?
Statue of the Child Jesus. Do you have one we could look at?
Sure.
No, sir, a larger one.
You don't want a larger one, unless it's for a church. That's why you want a larger one.
Could we see it, please?
Not my due to butt in, but unless you live in a big place, this will make your living room all a kilter.
Yes, sir. Do most of the people who go to the Mission Church trade here?
Good many of them, especially the kids.
Why kids?
More religious. Check on yourself. See if kids aren't more religious than you.
Might be so.
That's what's wrong with the world. Oh, I don't mean you're wrong with it. Everybody.
Yes, sir. I wonder if we could stick to the point, Mr. Flavin.
Sure. A lot of people from the Mission Church come in here.
Do people ever come in and sell back a religious article?
Like a prayer book or rosaries?
Yes, sir.
Secondhand, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Not since I've ever been around. It's silly.
Why?
People don't have religious articles so they can get rid of them. They have them so they can have them.
But if a man had a statue and wanted to sell it, he'd come to a place like this.
Sure, but he wouldn't want to sell it.
He would if it was stolen.
No, sir. If a man was to steal a statue, he'd be crazy or something like that. The only place he'd want to go is where crazy people are.
You may be right, Mr. Flynn.
I don't know what you fellas are looking for, but if it's somebody who stole a statue, he's crazy and you won't find him. You won't find him as long as you live, or in a million years.
That should cover it.
We checked religious stores out as far as Van Ness. We asked the same questions. The owners gave us the same answers, but none of them were as encouraging as Mr. Flavin. Frank and I had lunch and reported back to the office. It was 1:30 p.m. when we started into the squad room. The captain was just coming out.
I just checked for you in the lunchroom.
So we've been out on that theft at the mission.
May get some action on the Patterson case.
They locate him?
They think he's on the bus from Sacramento.
Well, that means the Bakersfield police.
We'll wait and see.
One of you fellows, Sergeant Friday?
He is.
I'm Drew Heffernan. My father said you wanted to see me.
Well, sit down, son. You didn't have to come in. A phone call would have worked.
My father said to get on over. He says that any kid that uses phones is lazy.
We want to ask you about this morning. You serve 6 o'clock mass?
Yes, sir. I'm senior boy, so I get the 6.
You're a senior and you take the early trick?
Yes, sir. That way, if you receive communion, you get to have breakfast sooner.
Father Rojas says you think the statue was there before mass.
I didn't look, but I have a feeling it was there.
A feeling?
You know, how you have a feeling about something, but you're not sure.
Did you stay around long after mass?
I put out the candles and hung up my surplice.
How long would that take?
About 5 minutes, maybe.
Did any of the people at mass stay on?
Some of them always do, especially ladies.
Oh?
Maybe they don't finish in time, or else they start new prayers. I don't know.
So when you left, there were still some women there?
No, sir. That was at first. After I went back to the sacristy, there was only this one man.
What man?
He comes at 6 o'clock all the time.
Do you know his name?
No, sir. But he works down in Olive, you know, paint shop, where the paint finds.
Could you describe him?
Sort of medium. He's wearing a suit that didn't match.
Didn't match?
You know, different pants than coat.
How about his age?
Oh, he's pretty old.
Take a guess.
About 40, maybe. There's nothing particular about him.
Then why did you notice him?
I've seen him before. And the bundle, I guess.
The bundle?
Out in front. I saw him when he was coming out. He had this bundle, and he almost dropped it.
How large a bundle?
It's hard to say.
Come on, son. Was it large or small, the size of the statue?
About that big. Yes, sir.
The sign shop. The suspect didn't work there anymore, but we discovered his name was Claude Stroop. We found out where he lived. 2:25 p.m. We arrived there. It was a hotel for men, mostly old men, mostly down and outers. It was called the Golden Dream.
Police officers, we're looking for Claude Stroop.
Hope Claude didn't get in any trouble.
So do we. Is he in?
No. He's got room 307. You can check if you like.
He'll take your word.
Were you on this morning?
Hmm?
Yeah, the early shift.
Well, we don't have shifts. My uncle owns the place. I'm the shift.
Did Stroop spend last night here?
Came in about 11.
When did he leave this morning?
Around 6, maybe before.
Did he come back after?
8 o'clock or so. Then left. Supposed to be back at 10. And pulled this trick.
What trick?
Our program. He knows the other fellas need him.
Program?
Yeah, here at the hotel. Every Christmas we have a program. Put up a tree and sing. They're mostly old fellas. Singing like that makes them remember back when they were kids. Then Jimmy Finn comes on.
Jimmy Finn?
He shares number 409. His family once had a lot of money, so he tells the fellas about it. Stories about Christmas. How they had this big log, and his grandfather used to start it up. And after dinner, everybody turned over his plate, and there underneath was a $20 gold piece. Brand new one.
When Stroop came in this morning, did he have a bundle?
I didn't see him come in.
You said you saw him.
I saw him go out after, but not come in.
When was that?
8. If you want to look for a bundle, I could give you his key.
We don't have a warrant.
It's all right. I know about police. It's all right with me.
Not with us.
I didn't mean that. I just meant it was all right with me.
Good King Wenceslas, look down on the feast of Stephen.
They were three old men. We couldn't tell how much better they would have been with Stroop singing the fourth part, but somehow you didn't care. This was Christmas at the Golden Dream, and it sounded fine.
That night, though the cross was cruel, when the poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
This is the last rehearsal. I got most of the songs down pat.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's why it's a shame Claude isn't here. He's tenor, and they need him to make it sound just right.
Does Stroop have a job?
No, sir. He used to have jobs. Not much lately, though.
Did he say where he was going?
No, he should have. The fellas need him.
When he comes in, will you call us?
Sure, and not say anything to him.
That's right.
I hope it's nothing serious for Claude. The fellas' troubles ought to be over.
Troubles?
Way back. It wouldn't count.
Tell us anyway.
Well, I don't know much about it.
As much as you know. Now, come on.
Well, something back where he used to live. He robbed somebody or something.
What else?
That's all. It was a long time ago, way far back. But he forgot it all, the robbing and everything.
No, not quite.
Hmm?
He remembered it this morning.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. For Jesus Christ our Savior was born upon this day.
Office and ran Stroop's name through R&I. If he'd been booked anywhere, we had no record of it, at least not under that name. 4:15 p.m., pawn shop detail reported back. No object resembling the statue of the child Jesus had been turned in. 4:18 p.m., I hung up the phone.
Patterson's on that Sacramento bus.
I thought Bakersfield had it.
They were supposed to confirm. They did. Hop over the station.
What about Fanning and Pryor?
They're still out.
Well, they'll be back soon. When's the bus arrive?
6:00.
Well, there's plenty of time for them to make it.
There's more time for you.
We're still in that theft.
Can it wait?
No.
What is it, $10, $15 statue?
When's the price determine a case?
I realize it's a church statue, but that doesn't give it priority.
It's important to them, Captain. Joe and I promised to get it back.
What do you got on it?
Nothing much.
And why are you so big-hearted?
Burglary Friday. When? No. Don't say anything. No. Right. It's Claude Stroop. He just walked into the hotel. He's our suspect.
Nobody's leaked to him?
No.
You'll keep. You can run him down tomorrow.
It'll be too late then.
I need it for the first mass in the morning, Skipper. It's kind of a big thing for them.
I'm sorry. I can't juggle details around so you can get a statue back. If there's time later on, we'll do our best.
Yes, sir.
You better get over to the station.
Yes, sir. Will you call Father Rojas over at the mission?
Why?
Tell him we're too busy to work on that statue.
But we'll do it later. Tomorrow or when we get a chance.
Why can't you call him?
Well, we better get over to the station.
If Patterson's on that bus, we don't want to miss him.
All right, I'll call him.
Friday.
Yeah.
I can send Fanning and Pryor. You might as well stay on that other thing.
Whatever you say, Captain.
p.m. We arrived at the Golden Dream Hotel. The desk clerk was right. Claude Stroop looked like a man who'd had his troubles at bargain rates.
Your name, Claude Stroop?
Yes, sir.
Police officers, we'd like to talk to you.
I didn't do anything against the law. Honest, I didn't do anything against it.
You haven't been accused.
I want to take you downtown.
We'd like to talk to you.
No, sir, I'm not going. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to talk to anybody.
You're half wrong already.
p.m. We returned Stroop for interrogation. He kept his word. He refused to talk. 6:05 p.m. Frank called Faye, told her he'd be a little late. Stroop didn't move for a whole hour. He sat and stared, but he didn't talk. 6:40 p.m. We got a final report from pawn shop detail. The shops were closed. There was no statue. Stroop still hadn't talked.
Don't you ever want to go home, Stroop?
If I was to talk, he wouldn't let me go.
Depends on what you'd say.
I'd say it wrong, and I wouldn't get home.
You won't this way either.
I'd like to go, you can bet on that. This is the seventh year we had the program, and I never missed a one. Not a single one.
Why don't you tell us what happened, Stroop?
How would I know you'd let me go?
You wouldn't.
I might as well anyway.
All right, what happened from mass on?
Well, there was mass. I came out and started down toward the hotel.
Back up.
I left my stuff at the hotel, and then I picked up George's car. I didn't steal it. He said I could have it any time I wanted. Only this time I didn't ask him. I took it and started out.
Yeah.
I should have asked, but I just didn't. I went over to Grand Avenue for the Christmas bulbs where this fellow sells them secondhand. It was coming out of the lot, but I did it.
Yeah.
The bumper must have caught the other car. Didn't leave too big a dent, but there was this long scratch. I got out and tried to wipe it off with my handkerchief. You know, spit on it like. Only it didn't do no good. I didn't think anybody saw. I don't know how you fellows found out about it.
I'll check auto records.
Right.
Stroop, we didn't bring you down here to talk about that.
You didn't?
No. There's a statue missing from the church. The statue of the child Jesus.
You mean I took it?
You took a bundle out of church.
Yes, sir. That was my other pants for the program tonight. I had a place sewed up and there was a button on it. You can check. But I wouldn't take a statue.
I don't think you would either. He's clear at auto records. Go on home.
For the program? You mean it's all right?
Good night, Stroop.
Good night.
p.m. We found Father Rojas. Frank told him how it was, that we couldn't get the statue back by morning, but that we'd keep trying during the week. He said he understood. We told him we had to get on. As Frank and I started to leave, the doors at the main entrance to the church opened. It was a good 200 feet away. It was hard to be sure, but it looked like a small boy drawing a bright red wagon behind him. When he got closer, you could see he was no bigger than a pint of milk. He was a luminous-eyed little Mexican boy with a face as young as yesterday. The priest seemed to know him.
Paquito?
In the back of the wagon was the missing statue of the child Jesus. He picked it up gently and walked up to the priest.
Father Rojas?
He just stood there looking up at Father Rojas.
Paco Mendoza, a boy from the parish.
Ask him where he found it.
¿Dónde lo encontraste?
No lo encontré, lo cogí esta mañana.
He didn't find it, he took it.
Why?
¿Por qué?
Todos los años Paquito rezó por un camisito rojo. Este año Paquito rezó al niño Jesús. Yo prometí a él mismo eso es el primer viaje en mi camioncito.
He says all through the years he's prayed for a red wagon. This year he prayed to the child Jesus. He promised that if he got the wagon, the child Jesus would have the first ride in it.
¿Tendrás el diablo para llevar a Paquito?
He wants to know if the devil will come and take him to hell.
That's your department, Father.
No es el diablo. Jesús ama a Paquito mucho.
We crossed over to the sanctuary. With the help of Father Rojas, the young boy replaced the infant Jesus in its rightful place, the crib in the nativity scene. Frank and I could have been wrong, but the small plaster statue seemed to approve. Mary, Joseph, the wise men, Gaspar, Melchior, Balthazar, the old shepherd, the young shepherd, the peasant, they all seemed to approve.
Vuelve a tu casa, Paquito.
The priest told the boy to go home. He took hold of his wagon, started the long walk out of the church. There wasn't much we could say. There wasn't much to say.
We just stood there and watched him go. Halfway up, he turned to look back. And he went on out.
I don't understand how we got that wagon today. Don't kids wait for Santa Claus anymore?
It isn't from Santa Claus. The fireman picks old toys and gives them to new children. Paquito's family, they're poor.
Are they, Father?
Locations were changed.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet on Tuned to Yesterday from December 22nd, 1953 on NBC. And that wraps up this Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Happy holidays.